Hey guys, do you like video games? Do you like heavy metal, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Time to rock out with your geek out. Metal Geeks! Welcome, Geekazoids. Here are your hosts, Carrie G and John Michael. Geek it out, fellas!
Hi, this is Chris Claremont, and I listen to Metal Geeks. You should, too.
All right, welcome, my friends, back to Metal Geeks. This is one of your co-hosts, Carrie G. My illustrious co-host is still missing in action. I think he's somewhere fighting crime somewhere, maybe. Or that, or his computer is still broken. But, yeah, we have a plethora of special guests this evening.
A placenta?
Not a placenta, but a plethora.
Can we get a thesaurus on that, please?
I will get you a thesaurus. So first of all, we have two Surly Nerds with me, James and Tony, both from thesurlynerd.com.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Then next, we have Jornell S3 Prototype from the Ninjaverse and altness.com.
Hey, that's my name, too.
Wow. And then as a special, very special guest this evening, we have one Mr. Jason Heinbach from Comic Palooza.
Nope, that's that way.
Who, this guy?
That guy, this guy right there. How's it going, man?
Good, good.
That's exciting.
Back to you, Bob.
Well,
back to the studio now. But yeah, since John Michael has not been able to join us in the past few episodes, we've been doing specialty shows, but he will be back soon. We are making arrangements for that right now. So let's get into the first topic since we have Jason here. Jason, tell me about how you've got started with Comic Palooza and how long you've been doing it.
Oh, man. I mean, we've been doing it as long as 2008. I've been with it since the beginning. We started in the lobby of the Alamo Drafthouse Theater. It was really just a quick comic book signing at the release of the Dark Knight movie with some comic book artists local around town and you know, just a place for people to come and drink beer and watch the Dark Knight and get a couple of autographs. And then it kind of cascaded into we opened up, I guess, a free event inside West Oaks Mall in 2009. And that was just kind of a free-to-the-public event. And, you know, somewhere around 1,100 people or so probably, you know, passing through the mall. And we had maybe 10 or 15 dealers booths. And then 2010 is when we had our first year at the Georgia Brown. So, I mean, I've been with it for, it's been, what, 6 years now? Yeah. And it's growing quite tremendously, especially with our attendance almost doubling or doubling in some cases year over year.
Yeah,
you know, I was there several years ago, and there was not nearly as many people as there was this year. It was pretty insane, actually, like the number of people that were staying. And there was like a two-hour wait, I think, on Saturday to get in.
Yeah, no. The lines got as long as 2 to 2.5 hours. I know that's discerning for some people, but I mean, I know that some of the major events like Dallas Comic Con, which is actually the week before us, were wait lines as long as 4 or 5 hours. So
yes.
We're pretty big. Yeah, we're a pretty big different venue from them, though. I mean, it's we're on a broader spectrum. I mean, Dallas is more focused on, you know, you get in, you meet your artists, you get your signatures, your autographs, you check the dealer's room out. There might be a few things in programming, and then you're kind of done for the day. But yeah, the wait lines were about 2 to 2.5 hours.
Well, that's why you encourage people to pre-reg.
Yeah.
Totally. Do what?
You want to encourage people to pre-reg at that point because, I mean, if you got a two-hour wait, the best you can be like is, hey, guys, if you bought your tickets online 2 months ago, you've been fine.
Yeah, that's true. Our pre-reg line was not as long. We did have a pre-registration line as long as probably about 45 minutes, even, and that was with running 6 scanners.
I mean, even compared to, like, the 4 or 5 hours, I'd take 45 minutes any day of the week. You know, it... 4 or 5 hours, you would feel like you get onto a roller coaster, but you're just really just getting inside.
Yeah, if I'm going to wait 4 hours, it better be a roller coaster at the very end of it.
No, it's just the line ride.
It's a line for the line ride.
The queue line, that's it, the ride. Queue the ride.
I don't know. If I'm going to wait 5 hours, I'd prefer more than just, you know, 45 seconds to a minute and a half of fun. That's just me.
Hey, I'm used to a... Oh, never mind. I'm not even going to go there.
Hi-oh.
Oh.
Whammy.
So, the show... I mean, I've been going since 2010 personally, and each year it's exponentially just getting bigger and bigger. How does other conventions around the country stay so small and Comic Palooza is blowing up so big?
Well, I mean, we're not really the only convention that's growing, you know, as fast as we are. In fact, Denver, of all places, had their first convention this last year. And, you know, this is the second time in history, for conventions at least, that a convention has done so well. They had 20,000 attendees on their first year opening.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's other conventions. Yeah, 20,000 attendees on their first year.
I think that's a really big part Houston's... of it is that people want other conventions because they can't get into Comic-Con flat out. They want to do these things. They want to do all the have the big bang of Comic-Con, but the chances of you getting into Comic-Con are so slim. So when something like Comic-Palooza opens up, people want to jump on that.
Right. You know, the two big competitors right now are going to be New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con. You know, New York Comic Con is about 70, 80,000 people, and San Diego is about 125,000 people. And, you're right, tickets sell out almost immediately. It's almost impossible to get in. And unless you have, like, internet working or you're working with a vendor or, you know, you have a DC badge from a press release or something like that, it's really difficult to get in. But Houston is a tough market for us. You know, conventions back all the way to what 1991 was the largest convention that we had in Houston was about 1500 people, and that was back in 1991, back when comic books and trading cards and stuff were a little bit more popular back in that time frame.
I remember going to some of those shows back in the day, and they weren't nothing like they are now. It was just a dealer room. That was basically it.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely. That was the days of Todd McFarlane. I remember going to one. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember going to one and buying like Spawn action figures because I was really into Todd McFarlane action figures at the time, and you know, begged my parents to take me. Oh no, I want to get the Malbolgia. We gotta go find it. And, you know, spending $100 on a figure that my parents couldn't even fathom. Like, why do you want that? It's a figurine.
You know, I had a lot of good guests this year too. How does that come about? I mean, how do you figure out who you're going to invite each year and who you're trying to please a lot of people, I take it.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're really about becoming a multicultural event other than anything. I mean, we really want to appeal to the every kind of geek, every kind of nerddom that you can think of. I mean, not just comic book genre or anime, but have something for anybody who's into any kind of sci-fi, any kind of you know, nerdy type thing. That's why we had the roller derby, we had Quidditch, we had, you know, the wrestling. I mean, we even had Scott Steiner there, who's in WWE, which actually turned out to be very well for him. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of planning and processing that goes into Comic Palooza each year. I mean, I'm already currently working on quite a few celebrity guests as well, at least for my department, which you and me spoke about earlier today. We were talking about Mr. Downs, that did the voice of Master Chief, and then Tony Baker, who's currently Joel in Last of Us and Batman and Joker in the Arkham series, and then what is that, Booker DeWitt from BioShock. But you know, when it comes to the bigger guests, I mean, we actually send out a lot more offers and a lot more invitations. There's a lot more that goes on behind closed doors that the public will never see or never know about. And, right. You know, I mean, cause there's so many things that go into the contracts and the underwriting and people canceling and if they're available for filming or, I mean, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, I don't do a lot of the big celebrity guests on my end. I take care of all the gaming technology stuff. John is the one that books all the big A-list guys like Patrick Stewart and Michelle Rodriguez, et cetera. So we have a pretty good tie with a lot of agents that we work with. One particular company in particular, a guy that books a lot of our celebrities for us or helps us with that department.
Who do you want to see appear over at Comic-Palooza? Who's your dream person to be like, hey, welcome to Comic-Palooza, and shake his hand and, you know, present him with the throne because you wanted him so badly there, or her?
Me personally?
Yeah, man.
I mean, you know, it's hard to say, to be honest, because I've never been like a starstruck person. I've never been like, oh my God, I have to meet this person. I have to see this person. You know, I guess if I had to choose one random off the top of my head, and I don't know why, I think just because in his movies, as Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., he's just like such a cool guy. He's like so like, he's just, I don't know, he comes off as naturally slick. You know what I mean? Like, he'd just be someone that I'd like to talk to. Like, is this guy, does he act like this in real life? I'm curious. Is this man, like, because it seems like that's who he is. You know, he really plays that character well, and it's almost like he's playing himself.
During my career, I've met a lot of famous people, a lot of, you know, musicians, people in bands. And there's either a two-way about it. They're either a douche or they're really down to earth. They're really never in the middle.
Yeah, they're really, really polar if you find someone.
Now, everybody here on the panel on this episode of Metal Geeks was at Comic Palooza. Tell me about you guys' experience.
I walked like 100 miles.
Would you walk 100 more?
I would walk 100 more.
Or 500 more, maybe?
Did you have one of those counters?
Just to be the man.
You should, like, get on the iPod and have like a step counter? I know some people had those.
Yeah, I actually have an iPod that does that, but I didn't bring it with me. I was too busy running around everywhere to even think about doing that.
There were a lot of ups and downs for us. A lot of it was behind-the-scenes stuff, which most listeners wouldn't even care to know about. You know, for us, it was our first time covering it as media, and we got pretty well taken care of by the staff, and that was kind of a positive experience. That being said, there was just so much to do there, and it was very nice to actually meet some of the celebrities and interview them that they again, were very down to earth. They just wanted to hang and talk out. We got to hang out with Zim for a couple minutes, and he just did the intro to our show. Like, literally, we walked over to him, and we're like, hey, would you help us out with something? And he was like, fuck yeah, I'll totally do that.
That dude is totally, totally cool. We got to talk with him also.
Yeah, let me tell you, that guy is... Man, I'll tell you, that guy is funny. So Friday night, we get in a private limo, and it's me and like two of our staff members, and we go out with about 10 celebrities, and we go over to Hotel Icon to eat dinner. And Richard Horwitz was in the cab with us, along with the other guy that does his counterpart in Invader Zim, and I can't think of his name. And then the voice of Rita Repulsa, and then what was it? What's his name from Being Human?
Sam Huntington.
Yeah, Sam Huntington, and some few other people. But Richard was in the car, and we were on the way over to Hotel Icon, which it was funny because the cab driver like totally took us somewhere else and had to make a U-turn and go back to downtown because I guess he didn't realize where we were going at first. But my only guess is that Richard had either he's just wacko crazy or he had been drinking because the whole time he is talking as Alpha in the limo from the Power Rangers. And he's just going, oh my God, the Power Rangers are so stupid. Why don't they just come out with their Zords to begin with? They'd win every battle. And then he totally took a 180 dive and turned it into like a totally rated R. Like, I could talk like this all the time. We could make it a porno and call it Alpha. Dog. But that guy was whacked.
I would love to be like just hearing that because that's got to be awesome. A buddy of mine showed me one of the comics where they did a read of Star Wars, and I don't think he was a part of it, but just voice actors to begin with, their brain is so off the wall. It's fucking amazing.
You have to be a little crazy to be a voice actor, I think.
Yeah, just a little. I wanted to go up to him and ask him to leave me a voicemail on my cell phone. Like, I don't even care what you say. Just leave my voicemail message for me.
He probably would have done it.
Now, what about your experience, Jornell, with the Altness crew that weekend?
We were everywhere. Like, this is the first time I went to Comic-Palooza. I've only heard about it years before, and I, you know, back then I used to be so worn out with conventions. But anyway, I must have been living under a rock because as soon as I walked into the place, I was in Brian's words, thunderstruck of the whole deal. You know, there's Quidditch and there was video games, the roller derby, and then seeing just
I know you like the roller derby.
I love the roller derby. No,
The ladies.
Houston has a really good roller derby scene, man.
They really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's huge over here.
I'm going to wait Austin.
Yeah, well, if you like you to see chicks meet each other.
I'm just saying.
Who doesn't like to see chicks meet each other? Come on.
Or aggressively play hard. Anyway.
Where are you going with that, man? I don't know what you're talking about.
There were video games and Project Steel was there. Machine. I mean, come on. You know, there was a lot of stuff to do. I was really impressed with what was going on, despite the fact of the escalators stopping midway during my time there. But I had a good time on my stand of it. Interviewing people was really, really easy. The place was nice and organized, too.
Oh.
Like, games were on top, and, you know, your vendors were on one side, and you had other vendors somewhere else, and it was great.
I think what you mean to say is that, really, of all of Comicpalooza, the panel that we did together is really the highlight of the whole show, though, right?
I was going to say that, too, because that was the cat's pajamas right there.
Where's my notes? I had a great time at Comicpalooza with my friends here. We had a fantastical time.
I will send you the check later, thanks. You know, next time you get stuck on an escalator, though, you can just walk up or down. You know that, right?
I'm glad you thought it was organized, because we had to figure out where to put stuff about a week and a half before the convention. Actually, 5 days before the convention, when the George R. Brown called us and said, oh, by the way, so ballroom B that you were going to have for one of your side/main stages, we can't give that to you. Do that for our graduation. And I was like, oh, well, that's lovely. Awesome. So we're up till like 2 a.m. trying to rearrange the floor plan for like the next 2 nights.
Yeah, graduation inside was a little crazy.
I was totally shell-shocked. Like, if I was at graduation and I saw, like, Luke Skywalker and, like, 5 other cast members from 3 different video games and movies walk by, I would have been like, my graduation's the fucking best now. I just saw Scott.
Somebody photobomb. I wonder how many photobombs there were in the back. Oh, is this Superman at your graduation?
There's Superman and Deadpool, and Captain Picard was there. That would have been
amazing. Captain Picard was there, though.
He was there.
So, yeah, if you want to check out any of the coverage that we guys did with the Altness, go to altness.com. There's a bunch of video that was just released. YouTube links. I'll put links in the show notes as well. But go to altness.com and check. I mean, there's a lot of footage that we did at Comicpalooza. Certainly Nerd covered it on. What episode was that? I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but
I don't remember.
Look in the iTunes feed.
Yeah, check us on iTunes. We're a once a week show, so it's whenever Comicpalooza was, it was that week. So if it was
about a month ago. 5 weeks ago.
If you were listening to their podcast and you said they were at Comicpalooza, you probably want to go farther back.
Start from the beginning and just listen to every single one to figure it out. Because these two guys like to talk.
A little bit.
How many episodes are you guys in now?
You just recorded 52 with us. So you are part of our season finale, and we're taking 2 weeks off. And then so we can kind of regroup and do what we need to do. We're going to have some mini episodes going up in the meantime. But season 2 will be starting in a couple weeks.
Season 2 will be on the CW next season, right?
It will be.
Yeah, we're going to have Kristen Kunk is going to be playing me. So yeah. She's gonna work on her voice
right before Arrow, which is gonna be a great lead-in,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Right?
So, let's talk about some other stuff, man. Let's talk about some video games.
Yeah, let's talk.
I hear we can talk about that.
Let's talk about what we're playing. What is everybody here playing right now? We'll start with James.
All right. Currently, I'm working on Dishonored. I just wrapped up BioShock Infinite about a week ago, and I started on Dishonored, and I'm about 3/4 of the way through it. So I'm playing catch-up right now.
What did you think of Dishonored?
So far, I'm freaking loving it, other than the fact that I'm going no-kill, and the game keeps giving me more and more excuses to kill people.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the game, they give you this heart. It, like, tells you the secrets of people, And so there's these town guards, and a lot of them are like, he's just a town guard, and he's just working, you know, to take care of his kids. Other town guards, it's like, this guy's a pedophile, and I'm like, I kind of want to go kill this guy now. I mean, but it's going to count against me because I killed a pedophile.
And what about BioShock in your opinion? What is your opinion of BioShock Infinite? I know you are a huge original BioShock fan.
Yes, yes. I was pretty skeptical going into Infinite. I will say that the short version of it scared me in different ways than BioShock did, just because BioShock 1 is about being kind of creepy and all that.
Yeah.
And BioShock Infinite's really about what happens when fanaticism gets taken way too far, both with government and religion.
Yeah, totally.
There's a lot of that was just like, oh, I'm seriously creeped out by some of the things. Basically, I was like, I know these people because they're on my Facebook page. I've seen these people. I'm like, these people creep me the fuck out. Overall, it was an amazing experience. Ken Levine, I don't think, can do any wrong by me. And the ending was phenomenal. So
Ken Levine, I just heard that he was hired to write a movie, to write a script for a movie.
He's going to be recreating Logan's Run. We'll be talking
about
that.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Logan's Run, man. Yeah, I mean, Ken Levine is a great writer. I mean, and if you can, writing video games is so much harder than just writing a movie, because you have to think about so much more than just what's going to be shot, you know? You have to worry about what the player is actually going to do in the game.
When we went to the Game Developers Conference, they talked about that a lot. They said you have to anticipate every move the player makes. If you think that, you know, at the very beginning of the game, he's going to turn around and shoot the wall or shoot his partner, you've got to anticipate all of that.
And what about you, Jason? Are you playing anything right now?
Console, I actually did pick up Heavy Rain. You know, I bought Heavy Rain a long time ago. I think I picked it up for like a few minutes and then never had a time to get around to it. So I finally picked it up again and started playing through it, which is kind of funny because the little kid at the beginning of the game, his name is Jason, and it's like the whole first 5 minutes of the game is like the dad walking through the mall,
yeah,
like,
looking for Jason!
Jason! And I'm just like, wow, it's like childhood all over again. It's like, I'm ADD and I did that to my parents. Like, you know, I used to freak them out like that too. I'd run off. But I do play a lot of League of Legends and I play way too much Magic Online. And not so much World of Warcraft anymore. I used to play a lot of that, but it's kind of like a once a week log on for a couple hours and then I'm off. But,
cool. And Jornell? But,
I just picked up Muramasa last night, playing through Deadpool. I just started Deadpool about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about Deadpool, because Jason and I were playing that earlier today. We got to talk about that, but let's continue on. How is Muramasa? Muramasa?
Muramasa?
Muramasa?
Foreign word? It's good.
Mimosa.
Mimosa.
Is it a mimosa?
Miyamoto Sosa?
Miyamoto Sosa? What?
No, it's actually a beautiful game. I was just playing it when we were doing the pre-shoot before. I never played the Wii version to it. It actually handles very well on the Vita. It looks beautiful and vibrant. I mean, I could hardly believe that, like, just standing there watching just the game idle, it's actually a video game. It's not just a picture on the screen.
Yeah, I do remember the Wii version. It does look beautiful. I just can imagine, like, the HD version of it would just blow me away.
Yeah, the semi-small screen HD version to it. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Is it only on Vita, or is it on PSN as well?
I only see it on the Vita. I haven't checked the PlayStation Network on my PS3 to confirm that you could play it on PS3.
I've been waiting for good games to come out for the Vita. The only thing I played so far is that Gravity Rush.
Play Soul Sacrificer. Play that game. What other good games on there? Hey, I got my Vita right here.
That's the only game, other good game?
No, there's other good games. I'm just trying to list them right now. Persona 4 Golden.
What's that?
Persona 4 Golden.
Okay.
Definitely check that out. There's a bunch of fighting games on there. PlayStation All-Stars, DOA 5+. That's an empty folder.
Empty folder, that's the best game ever.
Yes, and Metal Gear. I'm going to say Metal Gear HD Collection. You can play 2, 3, and Peace Walker on your Vita. Cool. So that's my recommendations to play if you haven't played those games.
And what about you, Angry Tony?
I've been playing Darksiders.
Like the first
five
one?
Years ago, calls. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a great game, though.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I just have very little time to play anything. it normally comes down to me just picking up any sort of weird puzzle game or Halo 4 just playing SWAT because I like shooting bitches in the face.
So I guess it's my turn now. The game that's been occupying a lot of my time is The Last of Us. Have anybody else played that?
No, so don't spoil it.
No, I thought about picking it up.
My roommate picked it up. Have not watched him play it.
I'm gonna say the story is freaking amazing. I'm a little let down with the gameplay, but I'm so invested in it now. I've got to finish it no matter what.
Have you heard anything? Have you played the multiplayer? Because I've had a lot of people say they like the multiplayer in it.
No, I usually try to finish the full single player before I even touch multiplayer. If I do touch it at all. I don't like playing with other people.
Maybe it wants you to touch it, though.
He likes playing with himself. That's it.
Just, I do like playing with myself a lot better.
Multiplayer is like why playing with yourself with other people watching and interacting.
That's true.
That's why I play multiplayer with you guys.
That's why they invented the chat headset.
And I picked up Deadpool today. And Jason and I were playing that for a while. I've made it maybe an hour into the game. The game is fucking hilarious. If you are a Deadpool fan, you're going to love the hell out of this game. Let me just say the gameplay is not great.
Yeah.
There's camera issues.
Perfect definition of that game.
Yeah. It's Devil May Cry light. Not even. I don't know.
Like DMC.
Like DMC. But yeah, there's a lot of camera problems. There's a lot of just various, you know.
There's mechanical problems in there, too. Like, I've seen clipping and screen tearing, and the game was not very polished.
So my question to you guys that have played it, it came down, and I believe, at a $10 less price point, right?
Yes.
So do you feel like at its current price point it was a good pickup for that price, or would you wait to recommend to people?
If you are a fan of the character, it's definitely a pickup. Because the humor is there. Nolan North's version of Deadpool is spot on. Because he's playing every, you know, all three voices in the head with different accent. It is my favorite part. The beginning of the game, you are sitting there. You're in Deadpool's apartment, and you get to interact with shit. Deadpool actually calls Nolan North on the telephone. That was great. Interacting with himself as two different people.
That makes sense. That sounds like something they would do.
Yeah. So, I mean, the comedy, the character is done immaculately well. It's just, you know, the gameplay is not all there, but I'll forgive it. It's not supposed to be a triple A title, you know?
I would say if you wanted to convert this to a movie title, it's like how this game is a parody to every other game. If you want to do it to a movie, like Scary Movie is to Scary Movies, period. Like Scary Movie 1, we all watched it. We all laughed hysterically to it. I'm saying in generalities. But if you're a fan of the genre and you're a fan of it, you'll enjoy the hell out of this game.
So, so better or worse than Wolverine Origins?
Easily better.
That's the pyramid question.
Yeah, better because at least, you know, with this I can sit and, you know, kick back and laugh my ass off and be like, that's fucking awesome.
There's some great. It's definitely mature. I'll give you I think Jason was talking about, you know, some kid's gonna walk into GameStop and go, hey, I want that new Marvel game, and the parents are gonna buy it for him, and they're gonna be like, there's gonna be tit jokes, and there was a couple of cum jokes in there in the beginning.
Oh yeah, really? No, I could just see it. I could see a kid, you know, because I mean, I'm not gonna say I can't speak for all parents, but there's a lot of parents nowadays that they don't pay enough attention sometimes to what they're like, oh yeah, sure, comic books, Marvel, whatever, just buy it for them. They're not even looking at the fact that it's rated M. They're gonna get home, mom's gonna walk in the room, they're gonna be like, what did he just say?
Yeah, he just blew up a block.
Was that enough?
Right.
What'd you say?
Yeah, no, because one of the things you interact with at the very first start of the game in the apartment is a blow-up doll. I mean, and you hit this pump, and he blows up a doll. And he's like, and then he says, what, you expect me to stick my dick in that?
Oh no, the best is, you know, the last time we played was this thing. You bit her hair. You bit her ear. She farted and she flew away through the window.
That's all I'm going to say about it. I mean, if you can get over the gameplay problems, you'll have fun.
It is a PS2 game at heart. At most, for all of us that have played PS2 games, it's a PS2 game at heart on a next-gen console. I think that's why they broke it down for a $10 difference, too. It isn't worth the $60. It's barely worth the $50, honest to God. But
I was going to say it's probably a $40 game, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. PS2, man, that brings back a lot of memories to me. I picked up Shadow of the Colossus the other day, and I forgot how good that game was.
I've actually got the HD version. I just haven't had a chance to play it yet. Everybody keeps saying I need to, though.
Oh, my God. That game, I didn't play it for years, and my friend told me, oh, you have to play it, you have to play it, you have to play it, and I finally got it. I was like, what? I mean, I'm so used to all these next-gen graphics, so I really want to say, no, it's fantastic.
If you have a projector, I'm saying, if you have a projector and you're playing that game, play it against the ceiling, you'll get mesmerized by how tall these fucking giants are in that game. it adds effect to it, but it's not a need.
So before we get into the elephant in the room, let's talk about PS3 had some problems last week. Everybody was praising PlayStation so much after the PS4 announcement at E3, and everybody was really on their side, and then like a week or two later, they brick a lot of systems. What do you guys feel about that?
Sounds like Sony operating the way they normally do.
There you go. See, that's what I was thinking. The people were so, you know, up in their butt at how well they did at E3 that you forget about all the problems that were before and that were still happening.
Sony didn't,
you know,
do good at E3. They just gave everybody the exact same thing they already made, just with like better graphics and more memory.
Well, they gave people what they wanted is what they really did.
Yeah. But, and then Sony has a huge problem historically with sending out bad updates and just bricking everybody's systems. They don't have the internal network for a live system. They don't have a good update system. They're really outdated when it comes to actually creating an operating system and supporting that operating system.
Do you guys know the acronym to Sony? That's something only not yet.
There you go. Have they said anything about a fix for this yet for the people that are affected, which I know a few actually?
There is a patch that's going to be released this week, I believe.
Yeah, I was hearing two stories about it, that you could fix it in-house, or worst case scenario, you call up Sony and say, I want new stuff.
Okay. I mean, that's one thing about Sony. They do take care of their people when they fuck something up. That's how we got PlayStation Plus, so...
Yeah,
that is true. But I mean, everything that they're doing is on this like redacted schedule. So it's like, oh, we got hacked, but we'll give you some free games. Yeah. I mean, it's this counterbalance, and that's really what a lot of E3 was. That people aren't seeing is that there was a lot of E3 that was reactionary. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea that Xbox had really come out and already said like we're going to do all these things, and the internet got their fucking tits in the water, or whatever about it, yep. And then Sony was like. Oh, maybe we shouldn't do that. That might be a bad idea.
Yeah, once Xbox or Microsoft actually confirmed what they've been saying all along, people freaked the fuck out.
It's because people are scared of change.
So let's get into that. Let's get into that topic. The Xbox One 80, because that's what they did. They did a 180 on what they originally said. I don't know. Do you think that was a bad move to actually go back and, you know... Do a 180 on what they were originally planning?
It was a horrible idea.
Elaborate, please. Come on.
I think it was just really cool. Reactionary to the fact, because I want to say money talked in this one. They saw they were doing bad in the selling point of the system, and they needed to do something to resurrect it. I mean, even their stockholders were complaining and dropping as soon as Sony was up at their conference doing things. So I think it was a lot of crash recovery off of what everyone's reaction was.
Because the PS4 pre-orders were kicking the Xbox One butt for a long time until they made this change.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, I was one of the people that believed what Microsoft was doing was good, and that all the changes they were wanting to make actually would definitely change and evolve gameplay and how we actually play and experience games. but I can understand that money is really where you know, they Microsoft's not doing this just for themselves. They want to make profit, and if they're not going to sell the console, they have to find another way to, you know, make the money. So they went and basically re.
Silence.
We have technical difficulty.
Oh, is that better?
Yep, we can go ahead and continue on.
I think Microsoft was trying to mute you about all your inner secrets.
I know. I think somebody might be listening.
I don't like them.
No, it's that connect. It's that connect always on, man.
I do have a connect in the other room. Maybe it was listening to us.
You know, from the get-go, though, Tony has been the bigger supporter, like one of the biggest supporters of Xbox, and he's been willing to fight a lot of the critics. He's been one of the people that says he thinks they're doing right by the industry, and there are points of it. Even Cliff Bleszinski came out this last week and said that he was like pro what they were doing with the Xbox because more money goes to the developers if they do it that way.
But he said that right before they did the 180.
Yeah, you know what, though? But I don't. I think that people overreacted to their announcement of the way they were originally going to do it. I mean, think about it. Steam's been like this for forever. I mean, you have to authenticate through one account. You download everything. I mean, it's not like you can't give your account information to a friend and they have Steam on their computer and they can log into your account and play your games, download it, and then play your games. You could have done the same thing with the Xbox One. But, I mean, computer games have been this way forever or for a long time now, and you don't see people running around complaining about that.
Right, but Steam announced this week that they're going to be working on – there's a new program in development where you can actually loan out your Steam games to your friends.
Okay.
No, you mean the same thing that Microsoft announced months ago that they now got rid of?
It's not actually gone officially on record yet. It's part of a code that somebody dug up on NeoGAF. But basically, the code showed that there was an ability for, so say I have Civilization V, I can give Tony a code that allows him to play it when I'm not playing it.
You know, and I want to be a supporter of change. I know a couple nights ago you guys might have been you're probably looking at me with three faces or what have you. But I don't think
we just saw you with your drunk face.
Oh, there was plenty of drunk face going on. I don't think the public, the gamer public, is ready for such a radical change. Steam had a hard time in its first couple of years trying to lift off into it, and you know, with games coming off of EB and GameStop, they're harder and harder to purchase. They were kind of forced into actually purchasing either online or your once-in-a-lifetime code. I think if Microsoft gradually made these changes into the system with both parties playing with it too, with Sony and PlayStation, and we could curve into that, but I don't think one important person saying, hey, you know what? This is great because we could do all this. And then the other one's like, you're crazy, right, guys? And
right. It needed to be a slow transition. And it couldn't just be, okay, here, I'm going to throw it in your face now. Here's what you're going to get. But, I mean, if you slowly let people get used to something new, it would have worked out a lot better for them.
For instance, DLC content was a big thing, too. Like, people were like, well, I'm only getting 80% of the game, and you're expecting me to pay 10% more to it. You know, and then, yeah, thank you. Cashcom. You know, people are just eventually moving on and being like, you know what, I do want that character. I do want that. Now, if Microsoft would have been like, I will sell our games for $10 less, and if you want to pay the $10 more to loan it to another friend, you know, there's a pro and con to it, and people may have their options instead of being forced into this is what's really going to happen. You know, and
I think that Microsoft is actually going to eventually start reincorporating what they've gotten rid of, adding it back into it slowly, piece by piece, going, no, you actually did want all of this, you just didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
So, can I talk about Killer Instinct for a hot minute?
Let's do that.
All right, so Killer Instinct was announced, and it was basically like, when Killer Instinct comes out, you'll be getting three characters, it's free to play, then you have to buy the other characters. And a lot of people kind of got in a bit of an uproar about this. And I was one of them. You know, I don't particularly care for the game, but I can see why people don't like that model. One of the things that they really could have done to kind of ease the transition into that kind of business model is essentially use what League of Legends does. Say, Killer Instinct's coming out, there'll be three fighters to start with. Every week, you will get three different fighters for the game, and they'll cycle out. And if you like a character, you can either buy it with in-game currency or pay $2 and buy that character for yourself. And right. people wouldn't have given a shit because they already do that in League of Legends. They do it in Dota. They do it in every other free-to-play game out there. And it doesn't unbalance the game. It just means you have a chance to play different fighters. That's my $10.
Yeah.
I would have been happy with Killer Instinct if they let you choose the three fighters to begin with. Because in fighting games, I know any multiplayer game that you have competitively, you get if everyone starts on the same playing field of it, there's going to be always those three people that are going to be so core and badass to it. If you know when they first announced that Jago was the first character to be playable for everyone across the board, you know how many badass Jagos are going to be out there in tournaments? It's going to be ridiculous. So that's my personal thought from coming from a fighting game standpoint, because they do that with Tekken Evolution. They give you six characters to begin with, and they let you pick and choose which one. So the spectrum is so wide, and you only gain two characters through ranking.
But I downloaded that. It's a free download, and yeah, you're right. You only get a certain amount of characters to start with, but yeah, but the more you play, the more you can earn.
But I don't want to sidetrack that away from Killer Instinct. I mean, the model works. I think they don't know how to produce it in the fighting game world.
Instantly, people were like, yay, Killer Instinct, this is the game we've been waiting for. And they said, you get three characters to start with, and everybody went, well, shit, I have to pay for everything else. Where literally, if you just embrace that League of Legends model, people are going to pay for it. People are going to pay for extra skins, they're going to pay for extra characters. There's a reason that League of Legends makes millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, especially special edition skins, holiday skins, stuff like that. I mean, I'm a League of Legends player myself, and I totally agree with that model. I mean, you know, you give people say, hey, you're welcome to play the game to its full potential. You're welcome to do it. You know, if you can't wait and you're impatient and you want this right now, then we offer it to you, and you can do this as you know these microtransactions. But if you want to play it and you're a casual gamer and you just kind of want to have fun with it and build it up and you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe I want a new character. I have enough points now. Let me go ahead and redeem it. Then, you know, it gives those casual gamers who are not really hardcore the ability to just play the game as they see fit when they want to pick it up, put it in their hands, and then, you know, get characters or get things as they move along until eventually it develops into you know, somebody who wouldn't normally go out and spend money immediately on a character or a skin, but they've been playing the game and they've built points and they've gotten so into it now that they're like, well, yeah, I get, you know what, just this one time, you know, let me go ahead and buy one. And then it cascades into, well, you know, let me get another one. You know, it's only $5, no big deal. And then that's exactly what happens. And that is why they are very, very well off with their business model. I mean, it's the largest free-to-play game in the world with over 40 million players.
Right. It's like getting hooked on drugs.
It is a very delicate market, though, because the fans will backlash and say things. I'll use myself as an example. I picked up MechWarrior Online when it very first came out, and I was super excited because I'm a big fan of the MechWarrior franchise, and so I bought into the $120 Beta Founders package. You get a couple of specialty mechs, but they're not anything special. They don't overpower the game. They're just like custom skins and shit like that. And everybody was excited for it, and everybody bought into it. And because the servers weren't good enough, because there was a lot of latency problems, more and more people began to fall off. I found out this week that they're introducing a new package for people who want to buy into that package, which is going to have exclusive mechs that you can only get for, like, you can only buy into it for, like, 2 months. And those mechs will be completely out of the game, except for those people who bought it. And the cost goes from between $20 to $80. Ooh. And in my opinion, like, that right there is the very crux of a broken free-to-play system.
Yeah.
Because you have just created something that you are demanding your players give money for. Say for whatever reason these mechs are broken and they completely dominate the game. If you weren't there on time when they came out and didn't spend that $80, you don't get them. And you have to be very careful because those free-to-play people, at the end of the day, even if I put $100 into League of Legends, there's always that thought in the back of my head that even though I dropped that $100, it's still free to play. I can get the fuck out when I want to.
Has anybody here played Marvel Heroes yet? The new Diablo 3 clone?
I've been playing it.
I've been playing it too.
I have been playing it. My biggest complaint, you know, like we were saying, it's the free-to-play thing. You get, like, five characters to start with.
Yeah.
If you want to buy any other good characters, they're, like, $20 each, and that's way ridiculous.
But you can also find them in-game, though.
Yeah, they are in-game drops.
I've already found, like, two characters. Like,
how long have you been playing, though?
Like, I played for 8 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the game isn't so ratioed so bad that you can't get, you know, you can't get any characters, or the characters of your choice. If you want, you know, you want to play as Colossus, you'll have to, you know, pay up for Colossus.
Yeah.
Before
there's definitely
the game...
a rarity factor to it, but it's almost like they treat characters like Pokemon.
Yeah.
You know, they have a rarity to them that they pop up. So
I guess Deadpool would probably be the most rarest right now in Spider-Man.
He's the most expensive. Yeah. Whenever James was playing it, he was showing me how much Deadpool cost and everything. And then there's Rick Grimes Deadpool, and just separate
Pirate
skin
Deadpool.
On top of that, and Pirate
yeah,
Deadpool.
Yeah, there's an actual bundle altogether just dedicated to Deadpool and his costumes.
I mean, the game is enjoyable. I like the game. It's just weird when you're running around a level and there's like 50 Iron Mans running around, you know?
But the thing about it is, though, is that if you take a game like Marvel Heroes is essentially Diablo. There is PvP that exists within the game, but that is not the crux of what the game is. A game like MechWarrior Online or a game like League of Legends is purely based on the multiplayer PvP aspect of it. The moment you start introducing things like specialty robots or specialty heroes that you can only buy that are super powerful, you have just unbalanced your game and made it less fun for everybody else.
You mean World of Tanks.
Well, makes it unfair. Because...
I mean, I agree to an extent. I don't know anything about the mech game that you're talking about. But yeah, if you're going to offer like characters that you can't get again, that I can see being like, you know, something that's totally... it's not fair. But vanity items, skins, and also like skins for League of Legends like World of Warcraft mounts and stuff like that. You know, I mean, like that I think is okay, because that gives like an incentive for players to play, or people, you know, it gives them like, they feel special because they've been with it since the vanilla.
Here's a weird thing to it. Back when Xbox Live first started, when they started giving you avatars, you know, they said they had these rules and stipulations of what your avatar could do and what he could have. And then Gears of War came out and they gave you a prop gun to use. And then in the rules and regulations, they said they won't have anything that's violent as your prop. So they took them away. But these were pre-order items that were given away at GameStop. And these cards now go for $80, $80, $90 a pop. For just these, you know, gold lancers and retro lancers, and you can't get them on the market whatsoever. And that's exactly what it is for MechWarrior. You know, if you want that and you want to have it, you have to be in the time to actually get it, or otherwise they take it away, and now you got to pay some outrageous price, or like any kind of special edition from eons ago, trying to find as a game collector. It's
right.
Tough to find, just because you weren't there.
So I guess the last gaming topic that I wanted to touch upon, one of the biggest, I guess, Kickstarter things that has ever really come out is the Ouya, and that came out in the stores today, supposedly. It came out in the stores, and I guess the people that, the original backers on Kickstarter, weren't getting theirs first, but have you guys done any research into this little system?
One of the guys I know actually was one of the backers, and he got his actually a couple weeks ago, so he's had his Ouya for a little bit now. And a couple friends of ours that we know got theirs. They went and picked theirs up at GameStop today.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I went and looked at what was available on the website today for the games. There's a couple interesting games that I really do want to play, but mostly it's just emulators.
Yes, that's what I was going to do. My point. It's, if it can run emulators smoothly, and I can use my Xbox controller, which apparently you can plug it into the back, I'm on board. If I can play all my emulators without having to hook up a computer and run stuff next to my TV, I'm going to get it just for that factor alone. I don't care about anything else about it.
There's one game that you can plug in your Xbox controller, download the app to your iPhone or your Android phone, and you can, since it's Bluetooth, hook up your PS3 controller. You can use any controller or pad or whatever the hell you want, and it all works in this one game that they created for the Ouya. And I was like, that's really fucking cool.
Oh, wow.
There are some really interesting games that are out there for it. Like I said, most of it is just emulators right now. And that's because it's new and because it's so easy to add that kind of crap. But soon, in the near future, we'll have things like Netflix showing up on there and Hulu.
It's totally open source, so I mean, people can create whatever they want for it.
Yeah, it's based on Android, so if you can hack Android, then you're going to be able to open this up, open and add whatever games you want, or free games, however you want to get those games. You're going to be able to add them to it. I like it because, I mean, as a toy, it's great. Yeah. As a gaming console, it's going to be crap.
Right, but if you think about it, the gaming console is not going to be good, but if you think about it as it's a gaming version of, like, a Roku or an Apple TV, you're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many of the emulators on there that I want to play. I mean, hell, they have, like, almost every game for the PS1 is on one of the emulator games.
Right.
It's like, all right, that's great. I mean, it goes as far back from the original Nintendo to Sega to Game Boy to... Literally, they have every fucking...
They have MAME on there. They have arcade emulation. I'm on board.
Oh, see, I would buy it just for that aspect. I mean, you know, all the old retro games and just... I mean, it's an easy device just to plug and play.
Karen, did you hear about what happened to the Ouya at E3?
Yes, they had the... they rented like a... I think it was on your podcast, actually. They rented like the parking lot across the street or something?
Yes, they rented the parking lot across the street from E3 because they didn't have the finances to actually go to E3 properly because it's very, very expensive. Yeah. And everybody at E3, the heads of E3, started sending out semi-trucks to block off the parking lot. They tried to call the cops on them, even though they had rented out the property. It was a pretty disgusting act, you know, in the face of what's supposed to be a celebration of video games.
Right.
You think that E3, I mean, the place where everybody goes for gaming, would embrace a new company showing up and being like, hey, we did something you didn't think was possible. I mean, we had just got people to back the idea of making a new cheap gaming console. Why wouldn't they just invite them in and go, hey, dude, just put on like a 30-minute explanation of what the hell your product is and have a little bit of booth space. We'll charge you a little bit of money, but not that much because you're just starting out. I mean, that would have been really awesome. That would have been embracing them instead of just going, you know what, fuck you guys in your little cube.
Right.
Which is really what they did.
You're a little guy in the big pool, you know, fuck you.
It's weird how that turned out so fast, because at first it was like an Android platform on a TV. This is crazy. And everyone backed in. It was a big talk. And then, like, as soon as, like, the closing date was coming in, it went out from a scream to a whimper. And a lot of hate started. It was really weird how that crap, because I was all for it, and then like I found out that my phone could go to the TV, so I was like, why do I need this? And then
you've got Nvidia coming up with their handheld that's Android based. That is, I mean, if it hadn't been for the Ouya, I don't think they actually would have created it or released it to market. I think it was something they were going to test and then go, oh, look, we could do that, but it's going to cost too much. But they went, wait, this Ouya thing's $100. Why don't we release a $300 version that's awesomer? But the price on that thing is still way too ridiculous for what it is.
Right, yeah.
Or the vice versa to that. Like, I think I lost interest of the Ouya because when Steam was announcing their little PC in the can, that I was like, oh shit, I need a PC and this will play all my games and does all this stuff, then
it'll, you know, play some of your Steam games.
Yeah, currently they're saying that, but like when they were talking it up, oh, you could change interchangeable parts and it's gonna be this much, you know, it's got all these ports in the back of it. I was like, this isn't essentially a computer light that just plays video games.
And yeah, it's a cheap man's PC.
Yeah,
they say it's very cheap looking. I've seen some reviews online. It's very plasticky,
they wanted it to cost $100.
Right. I mean, you can't really go too crazy on it. Let me pose this question: who here is planning to actually purchase one?
The Ouya and the Steam thingy. Yeah, I want both.
And silence.
No, yeah, I'm totally down for it. I want one. I think it's got a lot of potential, and there's a lot of games that I play on my phone that I'd much rather fucking play on the Ouya.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the emulation and the free games they have on there, and just the open source. You know, you can do whatever you want on it, on a little console that can just fit in your cabinet, and you're never going to see it again.
I'm looking for the free, innovative, independent games that people just want to... People that are creating their first games, and they're not going to be able to get on Sony or Microsoft's marketplace. Mm-hmm. This is the place for them to go and go, hey, I made this game. Please throw me a couple of dollars when you get done with it, because I would like to make some money off of it, but let me try to make something new and unique and innovative.
Because Microsoft isn't supporting indie games anymore.
Well, they do. They're just being assholes about it.
Right.
They've been assholes about everything.
Sony is the ones that are pushing forward and saying, we're embracing independent developers. We're going to have an entire independent marketplace for our new platform. It is one of the things that they said during their press conference that everybody said, fuck yes, because there's so many people that are getting into making games for themselves. And it's something that I actually wish I had when I was a kid. Fuck, I'd be in a totally different spot then, probably.
It's right. Never been easier to make video games than it is right now. In our entire history, in the 30 to 40 year actual history of video games, it's never been easier to make a game than right now. It's accessible. It's easy. Why not do it? And why not go with a cheap $100 platform that you know is going to be Android based? So if it's got the touch screen, it can go right over to phones, and you can sell it in two different locations. And that's a place for where innovation will come out. Yeah, I totally love Sony because they're going to be they have more independent games, and they're more polished and more refined. Microsoft is going to get the even more polished and even more refined versions because they want to, they want to be sticklers about their shit. Whereas Ouya is like, just release whatever the hell you want, and we might get some amazing content coming out of this, but it requires some of us at the very beginning to back it and go, hey, let's just give it a try. And I'm going to be one of those people that just goes, you know what? It's $100. It's basically a toy. And once they have Netflix on it, I don't have hook up my Xbox or anything else. I can just stream onto my Ouya. Awesome. I can just lay in bed and use that little box.
You know, video games, people lose track of what is a really good video game, and it's gameplay. It's the fun factor. It's not the graphics. It's if you have fun playing the game, that's all that should fucking matter.
As we go back to talking about Deadpool, and if the game is great and you're a fan of it, it's totally worth your time and money.
So let's move away from video games. I got some movie stuff to talk about before we head out for the evening. So, anybody seen any movies recently?
Star Trek, I think, was the last thing I watched.
Man of Steel, Now You See Me. Star Trek. How was Now You See Me? It's one of my favorite movies. I'm a big heist magic kind of fan, so it was a double enjoyment for me. And plus, the cast is awesome.
I've heard a lot of good things about that actually recently.
It was a fantastic movie. I liked it, and for me, I guess that means more just because when I was growing up, that's what I used to do. I used to do birthday parties for kids. I used to do church events. I was a stage magician, and I was convinced that one day I would eventually become the next David Copperfield, which obviously is not happening. I'm sitting
or David Blaine, maybe
to you guys, but. it was a great movie. It was done really well, and the trailers make you think that there is an aspect to it that is when you watch the trailer, you think, oh well, they have some device that maybe looks like from the future, futuristic or whatever, that's actually giving them a special ability, when really the movie has very logical explanations for everything that happens, and it's really, really neat how they tie everything in together.
Yeah, just when you figure out the movie or you figure out something, they even said in the movie, once you think you're ahead of us, you're actually two steps behind. And that's exactly how it is throughout the whole movie. You're like, oh, he did this. Damn it. No, he didn't.
So it's like Ocean's 11 meets The Prestige?
Yes.
Yeah.
Light on the espionage kind of, we're stealing stuff kind of deal, but it has that flair to it.
Are there any comedic elements to it?
There are points, yeah. Woody Harrelson plays a really good character in the whole deal, just conning people left and right.
He's making some kind of weird comeback since this whole Zombieland thing. Like, nobody really cared for him for a while, and then out of nowhere, they're like, bring him into everything.
Him and Twinkies. So.
Well, he must have the same publishers as Robert Downey Jr. He was in a huge slouch, and now he's on top of the world.
He's like the biggest star right now.
Yeah, maybe they met him together in rehab. In fact, they were in a movie together a few years ago with I can't remember. It was the one they animated. It was Philip K. Dick's story. Scanner Darkly.
Yeah.
It was Woody Harrelson and
that's right.
And Tony Stark were in with Scanner Darkly together. And that was kind of both of their big reinvigoration of their careers.
Wasn't that rotoscoped?
Yes, actually, well, it was kind of rotoscoped. It was each frame was hand drawn,
painted over. Yeah,
by a lot of students here in Austin, very cheaply paid, actually. Yeah. There's a lot of people that are very pissed off because they got are doing massive amount of overtime and not getting paid for their work. And
I did a rotoscoping project in school, and let me tell you, doing even like 3 seconds is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, because that's 3 times 24 if you're doing 24 frames a second, and that's unless you're an animator, you don't want to do it.
Does anybody else have an appreciation for the really old animated Lord of the Rings film where it's actually animated over like that? Just there, me, maybe.
There's a little love.
Yeah.
Yes, totally. I grew up on that movie.
I can't say anything. I've never seen it.
What?
It's definitely
bad nerd. Wow. Bad nerd.
All right.
That was a blunt unison.
I'm done. Thank you guys for the show.
We've got to take your geek card away. I'm sorry, dude.
Okay, so this is where the laptop just goes down.
No. I have that DVD. I will let you borrow that and let you watch it.
It is a piece of history. It really is.
It is a piece, all right. History, maybe.
I'm a big Bashy fan. Like, I love a lot of the things that he did. And I
so then, how much flack am I going to get then, sitting here, you know, being a part of Comic Palooza, and you know, before it was Comic Palooza, you know, it was, I worked at Midnight Comics, which is how it started because the owner sold the business, and then we created Comic Palooza out of it.
That's where we used to LARP.
To sit here and tell you that I have never seen any of the original Batman movies.
Not even the 1967, 69?
No, 66? I saw one scene when I was growing up as a kid, and I was trying to watch it with my friends, and the Penguin bit somebody's ear or nose, bit his nose. Yep. And my parents walked in the room, and they said, "Oh no, you're not watching this." Well, my mom did, and she said, "You're not watching this," and she turned it off. And since then, I've never seen any of the old Batmans. I've only seen the recent films that came out, Batman Begins and Dark Knight.
You had to be in that age where you were like, oh my god, it's Batman on screen. Right, this is fantastic. Yeah. Now you watch him like, oh my god, that's Batman. That's horrible.
Yes.
There are pros and cons to the Tim Burton Batman franchise. And I'm one of the few people that will argue this. Mm-hmm. I do feel that a lot of them were pretty bad. However, the architecture that Tim Burton brought to Gotham City, I felt still stands and holds up very, very well.
Yeah, the darkness to it, he did very well too.
The giant, you know, statues and everything that he uses, like I felt the architecture of Gotham. Right. Now that
he actually used what was in the comic books. I mean, those were in the Batman comic books for years, or for like the past like maybe 6 or 7 years before those films got made, and nobody knew that there was that super dark gothy Batman. I mean, and then eventually Tim Burton made his, and he says he's never read a comic book, but he massively used all of the design work from the comic books, so at least the people who worked on the film did. And that's where you get that look from. And it's so funny that your parents saw that one scene from, that was Batman 2.
Yeah, Batman Returns.
They wouldn't let you see that. And my parents, I was watching, you know, Friday the 13th, and like all the Jason, all the Freddies, Chucky, and all of that, and they're like, "Eh, we already got 3 other kids. This one can fuck up as much as he wants."
Yeah, when my family went out to movies, we went and saw Bram Stoker's Dracula when it opened up. My mom took me to see Lost Boys, I think, when it came out. But that's kind of what we were into. One year, I was taking my girlfriend out for Valentine's Day, and Hannibal had just come out, so we decided to like grab my mom because she wasn't doing anything. And we're like, "Hey, let's all 3 of us go watch Hannibal together because that's obviously a good Valentine's Day movie."
One of my birthday parties as a kid was my mom took me and all my friends to go see the 3D Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Nice. So I still remember seeing that one. That one my parents didn't take me to, but my older sister went to see it and snuck me in halfway through to watch it.
I had my father took me to the movie theaters because he didn't really care too much what I watched. You know, like, hey, you know, just as long as mom's not home. I mean, hell, when I'd get grounded from playing video games, he's like, "Here, you can play Zelda or Mario. Just when mom gets home, you have to shut it off." So, my first rated R movie, he took me to the theaters, and it's funny because they said, "Are you his parent?" And they're like, "Yeah, no, I'm the parent. I'm taking him." That we saw The Relic. If any of y'all have seen the original movie, The Relic.
You're making me feel old, man. Wasn't that in the 90s?
Yeah, no, dude, it was. You know, like, the guy comes back from, like, Brazil or something. And,
just a little piece of and, you just died.
I feel really old now.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I do, yeah. Yeah. I remember when as a kid I wanted to see the second Indiana Jones movie, and my parents would not take me to see it, but my uncle did, and it scarred me for a little bit. So sometimes you got to trust what your parents say. I was really young, though, and, like, what year was that?
Was it the face melting that made you horrified?
Maybe.
Was it the first
one? It was Temple of Doom. It was the Mullah Ram, you know, taking the chest out of the heart. Or the heart out of the chest?
Oh, Kali May.
Oh, the Kali May.
So, Jason and I, fortunately or unfortunately, went to the movies this afternoon. So, what did we see?
A World War Z, actually. Yeah. I've never been a movie critic. I usually
formulate your words, man. Come on.
I usually enjoy most movies. I usually enjoy most movies for what they're meant to be enjoyed for whatever, you know, the director said, hey, you know, I made this movie, this is what it's supposed to be, you know, and, you know, I just enjoy movies in general, minus a few, namely, you know, maybe like, you know, Garfield, which is the worst movie I've ever seen, and Twilight. But aside from that,
you've never seen
World
the
War
FP.
Z was World War Z was good. No, it was good in some regard. It was a very realistic depiction of an apocalypse type of event. It wasn't really zombies in the sense that, you know, we see them in Resident Evil or you see them in Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead or whatever. It was more of, you know, kind of like you'd see the movie The Crazies or what was that one? 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later. Yeah. It was a little bit more realistic, though. I mean, I like the fact, and I was telling Carrie earlier, how in every aspect of the movie, no matter where they were, and I'm not going to spoil it for any of you guys who haven't seen it and plan to do, there was no safe zone. There was always something that happened wherever they were. It wasn't like, okay, we're finally, you know, in this room and we've got these, you know, metal doors and everything and we're guarded and, you know, we're good to go. It's like, no, there was always something at every turn.
I will say Brad Pitt did a really good job and he carried that movie. He really did. I've never really been a huge fan. I mean, I love his work. Like Inglourious Basterds is one of my favorite movies. It's not really your typical zombie movie. It's more like what you said, an apocalypse movie with zombies in it.
Right.
Because
we were actually very blessed because when we very first started the podcast, we got an exclusive kind of interview with somebody who was working on the set. And they kind of had to remain nameless for everything just for the sake of their job security.
Okay. But
one of the things they said in there is they said, look, it's not based on the book. We do have the blessing of the person who wrote the book. That being said, everybody who's worked on it has basically been busting their ass, and we all feel that we've made a quality product. And from the get-go, it sounds like, oh, this is marketing PR, but the thing is, this person was allowed to remain anonymous. They could talk as badly about it as they wanted to, and they would never get any repercussions from it. And they all said, everybody worked hard, we all think this is going to be a phenomenal film, and we hate the fact that people keep tearing it down because they don't know anything about what the movie actually is. And now that the reviews are coming out, a lot of people are saying the exact same thing, like, it's a better movie than you think it is. Like, you've got to give this thing a show.
I would agree. It is a good, I mean, it's a fun movie.
Since y'all have seen it, on a scale from 10 to Michael Bay, how bad is it?
Where does Michael Bay fit on the scale? Like about a 15?
Like 10 is awesome. Like okay. Stanley Kubrick work awesome. Then Michael Bay is... the only thing worse than Michael Bay is Yule Bowl. So
he's I would agree on that.
Ooh, I thought they were neck and neck to bad.
They pretty much are, but at least Michael Bay's explosions look better.
He's got a point.
He's got a bigger budget is all that means.
Yeah, that he just has a bigger budget.
He casts good-looking women.
Or the same-looking women.
Same-looking women same that can't act.
Taylor Leone and young what's-her-face just almost look the same. I can't think of her
so as far
name.
As World War Z, I'd probably Make stick puns. It somewhere
that's
a little better than average, maybe about a 7.
Would you go buy the movie if it came out?
Would I buy it? No, but I would watch it again.
Okay.
So, Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, I wouldn't go run out and buy it. I would watch it again. Absolutely, I would have to agree with that. Or I would go to the movies to see it again. Like, hey, let's go watch this. You haven't seen it. I have. You know, it's an enjoyable movie. Let's go see it.
So it's definitely you can definitely red box it.
Yes.
Oh definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It's viewable, not ownable.
I mean, it is a good zombie movie. It's just different than a lot of people are expecting. It's not a George Romero zombie movie, and it's not.
Don't we need that, though? Aren't we getting a little, like, worn out of the whole zombie thing at this point?
I think so, because this is strange, because they do make the point in the movie to call them zombies. It's not like, oh, it's some walkers or some weird, you know, it is a weird disease that, you know, turning people, but they call them zombies every time.
About fucking time. Well, yeah, it was that in the book, too, so.
Yeah.
So this is loosely based on World War Z, the book, and it's Max Berry, who's Max Berry is a completely different writer.
Max Brooks is actually the son of Mel Brooks, too.
Yes, but if Max Berry wrote it, it'd be a lot more political and hilarious. Max Brooks, having read it, I prefer the kind of episodic, it's you finding out what happened along the story,
right,
instead of having it all told from one character's point of view while it's happening. I like the looking back and seeing what had happened. And that's kind of how I wish it had been more.
And I can understand why they didn't do the movie in the exact style of the book. It is, I don't think it would have worked as a story.
Thematically, it's not going to work. But story, like as the written word, it made a lot more sense.
I do find it interesting, though, that when, and Carrie, I don't know if you caught on to some of it, they really made a lot, or quite a few, several religious, they took some religious aspects and put it in that movie. They were really inferencing some things in religion, specifically in Christianity and in the Book of Revelations.
No, I didn't.
With it being in Jerusalem and everything where they had to go and whatnot. But
I believe they actually changed that. That was one of the things that we heard during our interview. Was that the ending of the movie, and I again, we haven't seen it, so we don't know, but apparently the ending location-wise was changed like twice, I think they said.
Yeah, they redid the ending twice.
Right, there was a lot of rewrites. I mean, they brought in, like, you know, Matthew Michael Carnahan was on it, Drew Goddard, Damon Lindelof, and it's, you know, yeah, and, you know, the story was written by the version of the movie, the original story was written by J. Michael Straczynski. So, I mean, you have a lot of good writers that came in to make this a decent movie. I'm not going to say a great movie, but...
The same thing can be said about Coyote Ugly. It had amazing writers on it, but that movie was still Coyote Ugly.
And you just admitted that you saw that.
And the fact that I know about the making of that movie, too.
Right. You have the DVD and watch the bonus features.
You did. That's what I was getting ready to say.
I will say that for people who are watching or listening to this, if you did see the movie and enjoyed it, I highly suggest reading the book. If you don't have the time to read the book, pick up the fucking audiobook, because it is one of the most phenomenal audiobooks that you can get.
It is annotated, though.
It's Mark Hamill. There's a bunch of, like, just really big famous actors that are actually, like, doing the entire book. So I definitely recommend picking that up.
We have the book here, but I would be interested in hearing that now.
Yeah, the audiobook is not the full book, though.
Okay.
That is one thing they said, that some of this stuff has been cut out of the audiobook just for time constraints, because the book's already pretty damn long, and it's like, it's not, you know, Harry Potter long, but it's a fucking long book, so they had to cut some stuff out.
Now, would you guys recommend watching the movie and then listening to the audiobook, or vice versa, or reading the book and the audiobook?
I don't think it matters in
this
case.
They are similar, but separate, try them each way.
I look at it the same way I look at Walking Dead. The TV show is completely different than the comic book.
Right.
I look at the movie is completely different than the book.
Yeah. I would say listen to the audiobook on the way to see the movie. Just, you know,
you got like 16 hours to spare.
Yeah, that's Carrie, you want to – we can do that. Let's just drive out to Conroe and see the movie out there.
You guys can drive out to Austin, and we can go see the movie. So.
There you go.
There you go.
So I did see a sneak preview of a movie last night. I don't know how much I can actually say. We didn't sign any kind of like disclosure or anything. There's no NDA, but I went to a sneak preview of The Lone Ranger last night.
Ooh.
That movie seems like it's incredibly racist.
It is a little bit, but I gotta say, I had a lot of fun at that movie. If you're looking for,
so you would say that you would say that you had fun being racist.
Did you see any Asians?
I'm not Paula Deen racist, but
all Paula Deen racist being a scale of racism now,
right? But yeah, I mean, for what it was, it's a fun movie. It's done by, you know, what's his name, Gore Verbinski, and Bruckheimer. Yeah, so if you like the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, you would probably like this movie. It's exactly the same.
So it's fun.
It's fun, exactly. It's not going to be. I had more fun in this movie than some other movies I've seen this summer. I'm not going to mention any names, Man of Steel, but.
How is Arnie Hammer's.
Red and Blue.
Right?
How is Arnie Hammer's acting in the movie? Because, like, I'm hearing rumors. My roommate has been telling me that he's poised to be the new Batman.
Really?
Yeah.
He's not a bad actor. He's a little stoic, or I'm trying to think of the right adjective to describe him, but.
What will it take to get us a fucking Batman that can play Batman and Bruce Wayne? I mean,
Michael Keaton, come on, he was the best.
I honestly, he did it better than most. I'm just going to throw that out there. He did actually know how to be Bruce Wayne and be Batman. Most of them have killed like this.
But yeah, if we're going to have to give it a number scale, I would give it better than a Michael Bay.
So not even better than World War Z.
I would put it above World War Z, to tell you the truth. People might not agree with me. They might not like the style of that kind of movie, but I had a lot of fun, and I wouldn't mind seeing it again in the theater, even though I had like an annoying family behind me that was talking the whole time.
Much like video games, it doesn't always have to be good. Sometimes right. It just has to be fun.
Exactly.
And that's how Nintendo makes money.
Did you say that's how Nintendo makes money?
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed. So there's a couple bit of Marvel news I wanted to talk about. A lot of Marvel stuff coming up, man. There's a rumor, this website, comicbookmovie.com, is saying that Doctor Strange is gearing up to be the next big Marvel character for the movies, I guess what they call it, the third wave of the movies?
Yeah, it's going to be the third phase of it, is what
third
it's called.
Phase, yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, it's not that big of a surprise because Doctor Strange has been tossed around for quite a while.
Yeah.
I think with the success of the Doctor Strange animated film, and just in general, he's becoming more and more of a prominent character because he can base himself in kind of, he's the midway between Thor and the Avengers. He hits that magic mark of Thor and still the reality of the Avengers. And
right,
so kind of putting him in there is going to be good for them.
He is a great character. I mean, you just have to find the right actor to really get it going. Because they're talking about him being sort of like the Samuel L. Jackson of the new Phase 3. So he's going to be part of all of the new movies.
Right. And the problem is that, you know, you got to finally get an actor that really looks the part. And unfortunately, he looks a lot like Iron Man. So you can't really cast Downey Jr. in both parts. So,
right. And his faithful manservant, was his name Wong?
I forget. It's been a long time.
I mean, I would not be surprised. I mean, you have, like, you know, the guy with his head on fire, demon guy, and then
Dormammu.
The demon guy.
That's Dormammu.
Dormammu, yeah. The dread Dormammu, right?
Dormammu.
It's not pizza, it's Dormammu. And so, I mean, and then the other great news that, you know, has come out recently, Robert Downey Jr., who we've been talking about, has signed on to play Tony Stark in Avengers 2 and 3. Not only him, but Joss Whedon has signed on to write and direct.
That's because Joss Whedon said he wouldn't make any more Avengers films unless they signed him, Downey right. Jr., back on. So basically, he had them against the wall, and they were like, well, shit, there's all this money that's here waiting to be made. Should we walk away from this money, or should we do it?
Robert Downey Jr. Said he wasn't going to come back and do it unless everybody else got more money, all the other actors.
Yeah, because he got paid way more than everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. became the union manager for the Avengers.
He really is.
Which is really strange that Tony Stark was actually trying to get other people money and jobs instead of just trying to stab them in the back and kill them.
Right.
Because that's what Tony Stark does, because he's an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I'm not saying that Robert Downey Jr. wasn't really well known and famous before this. He was, but I think now with all these Iron Man movies, they have really labeled him as Iron Man. Like he is, like people see him now and they're like, "Oh, look, it's Iron Man," you know.
Robert Downey asked him like multiple times how he gets prepared for, you know, the role, and he's like, "I don't. I am Tony Stark. That's the thing." Right. It's like I was a rich guy that built exactly a bunch of stupid shit.
Well, I mean, rewind this conversation to like, you know, 8 years ago when Iron Man 1 or whatever the fuck was going to be coming out. Everybody said, "Hey guys, there's an Iron Man movie coming out," and Tony would be like, "Really? Who's playing Iron Man?" And I'd be like, "Robert Downey Jr." And everybody went, "Oh,
the guy from Back to School."
No, because everybody's response was, if you were going to get somebody to play an alcoholic in a superhero suit,
yeah,
you might as well go somebody who knows the role.
I mean, he was famous before, but now he's just reached like this whole totally new level, just like Johnny Depp did with the Pirates.
You could say that he really has hit this Tony Stark level of fame.
Yeah.
He's been doing research his whole entire life for that role.
He has, and that's happened with a lot of celebrities lately. I mean, that's happened with Robert Downey Jr. in the role of Iron Man. That's happened with what's her name? That's played Katniss Everdeen in the Hunger Games.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence.
And now, like, you know, Tony says
her name is his girlfriend.
Do what?
Her name is my girlfriend.
Oh. I'm kind of curious to ask some of these actors, actresses, like, you know, does it bother you to be so successful of a movie, and you're this main character in this movie of this either this cult series following, you know, like the Hunger Games, or, you know, these comic book movies that everybody loves and knows from childhood. Does it bother you to be labeled as that? You know, I mean, because that's how you're going to be seen for at least the next 5 to 10 years.
Right. I think honestly, it would be different if it was a bunch of sweaty, fat fanboys coming up to them and being like, "Oh my God, it's Mystique. I want to put my penis in you." But 9 times out of 10, like in Robert Downey Jr.'s case, there are kids that walk up to him on the street and says, "Hey, that's Iron Man." And that lights him up, and he just picks them up and he hugs them and he goes, "Yes, I am Iron Man." And that's the way that a lot of these cult people are, is that, you know, yes, Katniss is Katniss, and people are going to recognize her for that. She was also Mystique, and these kids are going to walk up and they're going to recognize her. Yeah, and they're just going to recognize her and just be like, "You're my favorite character." Fucking, what's his name that was in Twilight? Robert Pattinson.
Says he's forever, you know, stuck in that role.
Well, no, but the thing is that he fucking hates everything to do with that series. The one thing that he loves is that he was in a Harry Potter movie. And when people recognize him for that, recognize him for that, he lights up like a Christmas tree, because that's, to him, his quintessential
Cedric movie. Was one of the shittiest characters in all of Harry Potter. He's like, he was a fucking Hufflepuff and he got into the fucking Goblet of Fire. You can't be a Hufflepuff and do anything good. No, that's impossible. No, it's against the fucking rules.
We've angered the Harry Potter nerd. I'm sorry.
You'll know that the two of us have Slytherin colors for our bar there for a reason.
Oh,
I'm a Potterphile. Thank you very much.
So,
Potterphile.
I guess that's all the news that I have for this week. What about you guys? Are there any other topics you would like to touch upon before we leave?
You know, just one, because I had a question earlier, and I'm just kind of curious what everybody else kind of thought of it. We were speaking on World War Z earlier and talking about zombies. Going back, what is it, about maybe 3 or 4 months ago when it was in theaters, because now it's out on Blu-ray, right? And I thought it was a movie worth buying. What did everybody think of Warm Bodies?
That was fun. I liked it.
It was a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah, I still need to read the book.
I watched it recently, and I was very, very surprised by it. I was originally told it's Romeo and Juliet, and I was like, "Oh, this is going to be horrible." And then I watched it, and I was like, "Hey, this is actually a pretty fun movie." And yeah, I think it's one of the better zombie films to come along in a while. And honestly, I think the zombie franchise as a whole is going to benefit by going the direction of Cabin in the Woods, which is taking a pre-established idea that we're all so used to, and then kind of turning it slightly, which is what Warm Bodies did, which is what, honestly, 28 Days Later did. It took it the premise that we're familiar with and just changed it up a little bit. And so I don't think zombies are going anywhere as much as I would like them to take a break, but I think that what people can do with them is expanding, and people are thinking outside of the box.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because that was a movie that I was very surprised by it. I went into the theater watching it thinking, okay, it's going to be funny. I'm going to kind of enjoy it. I'm in that mood to kind of like laugh at stupid comedy. And I thought it was going to be a little bit more over the top, like Scary Movie type comedy or something, you know, of that nature. And to be honest with you, it had a lot of comedic aspects. And it was funny in that regard. But at the same time, they really made you – or I felt that they really made – you really like the characters and kind of develop that relationship with them through the movie. And it was a little bit more serious than I expected it to be. It surprised me.
Feels.
Did anybody read the book?
No.
No.
Yeah, too many words. No. This actually make me sleepy.
Somebody listen to things I want to read soon.
So, I guess we'll wrap it up here, guys. Thanks for being on an episode of Metal Geeks with me. This is a time for everybody to pimp out your own shit, so how people can contact you and find you and download you and whatever they want to do to you.
All right. Hey, Tony, where can they find us?
Like, I don't get fucking have to say this every goddamn week. Facebook.com/TheSurlyNerd. TheSurlyNerd.com. Twitter is @TheSurlyNerd. Email is TheSurlyNerd@gmail.com. And iTunes, Surly Nerd, listen, rate, all that good stuff.
Google Altness, ULTNESS. We're everything, Altness. So YouTube, Facebook,
Twitter,
Google Plus, Twitter. We're on there. We're all video podcast kind of deals. So that's all for Altness. On the audio side of things, me and Half Ass Ninja, we are part of the Ninjaverse. TheNinjaverse.wordpress.com. You can look us up on Stitcher and iTunes. For the Converse and the Ninjaverse is one show, and the other show is Two Ninjas, One Podcast. So check us out.
And, you know, if you want to go check out a little bit more about Comicpalooza and see what's to come, especially for the 2014 season, just go to comicpalooza.com. You know, I have a direct email, too. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, it's just tech, T-E-C-H, @comicpalooza.com.
And, of course, this is Kerry G. John Michael is not here. Jay and Metal Geek. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and iTunes. Yeah. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe. Like us. Leave a comment. We like all that. Share with your friends. All that good stuff. Share.
Sharing is caring.
Because we're having a podcast orgy. Just everybody put the thumbs up.
Putting podcasts in podcasts. Podcastception. Okay, that's your thumb in your mouth. Thumbs. We give him the Bill Clinton thumb.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming and being on the show. So, everybody, you know what? Keep it geeky.
Hey, Geekazoids! Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit MSRcast.com. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.